blew me off for a bottle of tequila. Tequila's no good for you. Doesn't call, doesn't write. It's not nearly as much fun to wake up to.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Scalpels and Tequila, a Grey's Anatomy recap podcast. My name is Ayla.
And I'm Tamsin, and today we are doing season 19, episode 9. And I think you want to say the title for this one. You were excited about it last week.
I was so excited about it last week. I was. Yeah, Love Don't Cost a Thing by the J-Lo. I can't believe I missed Smash Mouth All-Stars last week. I'm like pretty miffed about that also, but I'm now quite excited for all the song titles.
I know. We need to start getting back into it like we used to in like season one.
Well, it's because we had to like Google these obscure fucking songs, whereas like I am going to have this song going around in my head for this whole episode.
So good. Do you know why? I actually think I figured out the mystery of why you missed out that the last one was called All Star. Because on the Amazingly Legal website that we used to watch this show,
it was listed as Love Don't Cost a Thing. And this week, it's still listed as Love Don't Cost a Thing.
So I blame the website, not you.
Oh, the completely legal website. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have an update for you. Now, I don't know if you remember, but a friend of mine from the hospitality world is pregnant, and they wrote in to us saying that to get over pregnancy boredom, they were going to start watching Grey's Anatomy and listening to our podcast.
Amazing.
So I got an update from them the other day, and I nearly ran off the road. I thought this was hysterical. So they've messaged in, their name's Frankie, and they've said, "I feel like you will really appreciate this. I have been watching so much Grey's that Bub recognizes the outro and starts kicking."
Oh my goodness. I mean, fair. fair. That's incredible.
I kind of feel really bad for this tiny baby.
Why? It's going to be a doctor before it's born.
No. That I completely agree with. But they fuck off the outro.
They do.
I feel like it's going to be one of those really funny childhood moments when the baby's about, you know, 14 and they ask, "Hey, parent, what are the non-binary words for parents?"
Parents?
To a specific person? Is there not a...
Oh, like if you say hello, like if you're talking to your own parents and you're like... Like instead of mum or dad.
Correct.
I don't know.
No.
But you know that you can make up your own names. Like I think grandparents do it a lot. Like my mum.
Oh, everyone's either got a nana or a nono or a granny or a gran or a grandma.
Oh, I know like a vovo and a mimi, and like I just know people just make up words.
Vovo? Do they wear nothing but frilly pink dresses with white sparkles on them?
No, that would be adorable.
That would be amazing. But yeah, I just love that there's going to be this time that happens in their life where they go up to their parents and say, what did you do while I was pregnant? And they sit them down and they make them watch Grey's Anatomy. And they just realize that the whole time they were in the room, they were watching this really like slutty, dramatic TV show.
Yeah, brilliant.
Fills me with joy. So I thought you'd enjoy that little update.
Yeah, I love that. I love that just as much as I loved this episode. Trying to connect it. This episode was great.
Mm-hmm. Thoroughly enjoyed this episode.
So much fun. And I loved all the interns. I was like, okay, I'm into this now. I'm here. I'm with them. I'm rooting for them.
I'm intern this.
Let's go.
My only complaint about this whole episode is the shoving of the Link and Joe. I didn't need Whitney to be a storyline. I needed to see Helm look at the hole.
I know. Are you about to make a weird joke? Are you about to make a weird sex joke?
Oh, no, but I think you just did.
I didn't. I thought that's where you were going.
Good morning.
I love Taryn and Yasuda so much. I am so glad that Helm is getting like a storyline she deserves, you know?
She looks so happy. But that's what I mean.
So happy.
I didn't need Whitney, the pregnant lesbian, holding Link's hand. Like, they're victimizing Link and making him a good dude, and it's just all a reason for Joe to swoon and for Amelia to voice chat with Kai and Link to wipe egg off his shirt. Honestly, you're going to smell bad. Just take the shirt off. But I didn't need that. I would have liked to have seen more of the other bits.
Yeah, I would have been happy if this was a no hospital episode, to be honest, and it was purely just like flashing between this adult dinner party and this kid's house party. It was just the mix of these two worlds, and that's all it needed to be. Sometimes, like every now and again, when Grey's does an episode not hospital related, it's so great because it's so refreshing and you get to know these characters even more. And I still think we got that, but I just think I would have lived in those two parties entirely this episode and been happy.
What other adults would you have had at Teddy and Owen's house?
Ooh.
Obviously not Maggie and Ndugu. That just feels that wouldn't terrible. Have worked. No, thank you.
Well, do you know what I actually was thinking about at Teddy and Owen's house? There's a moment where they're talking about they're snapping at each other the whole time, but the moment where they're talking about who's going to be head of trauma. And my brain was just like, April, 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 April.
Yeah, but we can't separate April and, oh my God, brain blank, Jackson. Avery again. Yeah, we can't.
So my answer to that would be, I would have loved it if Jackson and April were at that dinner. Isn't the answer to that question?
Oh, okay.
I just think it would have been like a good time.
We're popping through town. Because it couldn't be Amelia and Kai.
No, they weren't there. It's not Joe and Link. They're not quite there for a dinner party with them. I don't have a good answer. Meredith's not there.
Webb and Catherine?
Not at the moment. I think Webb is being weird.
Are there no other couples left in our hospital?
Not at that level, no.
No. That age group?
How bizarre is that? Like, they've become the oldest, like the older,
yeah,
the older, wiser fit, like couples of the hospital. Your cat's playing rough and tumble in the cupboard.
They're playing rough and damp now, which is what I wanted to see of a Suda and Helm. I got it there.
1,000%.
Mm-hmm. But we've jumped forwards.
We have. We got excited.
What was the monologue about?
Let me read it to you. Every disease has its unique course it takes in the body when left untreated. The process begins with exposure to a root cause that sends a ripple effect throughout the body. The disease then progresses, ultimately resolving in one of three possible outcomes. You get better, you stay chronically ill, or you die. Surgeons swoop in once the diagnosis is made and the patient needs reinforcements. We take decisive action in order to give them a fighting chance. Sometimes, despite our schooling and centuries of medical advancement, the disease wins. It takes over our cells one by one until the damage can no longer be reversed. When that happens, all you can do is take the loss and move on. But when you can change the course of someone's disease, you can change the course of their life. It's enough to make you want to come back the next day and do it all over again.
Spoken by someone who's never had a chronic illness in their life.
Yeah, fair.
But I actually got this one. It's all about fighting for things that you believe in and how it can negatively and positively affect you. And I will say I do really like Natalia's storyline, our stage 3 esophageal cancer who ends up with a brain metastasis. Whew.
That was I thought that was a really important story. I think it was really I think it's really good when Grey's makes it very clear how impossibly expensive the medical system is and how it's so hard for so many people to get the treatment that they need, and it's so inaccessible. And I think it's really important to have these conversations. But before we move on to that, I thought that the theme or the monologue was talking about, I just thought it was a lot more basic than what you just said, actually. So maybe you got it. I just thought it was like one thing, one moment in your life that's going to change the course of it. I just thought it was that kind of basic, because what we have today is we have a lot of people making new connections. We have Levi meeting this guy. We have Helen Yasuda.
I was waiting for you to squeal about that.
I can squeal about it in a minute. We have Simone making a decision to say yes to Trey. Mm-mm. And we have Teddy kind of starting her journey as chief. And I kind of thought that's where it was going, but maybe it's not. Or it's everything.
Yeah, because I was like, well, these sort of long-term choices that you make and big decisions. Mm. And for Griffith, that's this plague of an ex-boyfriend who is frankly rather unpleasant.
Yeah, what a horrible person. But I also, that thing of when you're, they have a history, it's hard to erase that sometimes. But also, shouldn't it be pretty clear and pretty obvious that she does not need him in her life?
Yeah, but like, is this a better the devil you know situation?
I don't know. It's weird because he was so awful, and everything he was saying about like, these aren't your people, you're so much better than all these like chumps, like come back and be better.
And they just kind of brushed it off as him being a snob.
But he just like apologized and made some jokes about, hey, remember when we did this fun thing? And that was all fine. I did not expect her to say yes.
Well, that's the thing. So we all remember him coming in last week. And when this episode sort of opens, they've got all the decorations up. And I got really excited thinking they were decorating a Christmas tree for the, you know, lying on the ground moment.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're having a house party
downstairs while they're setting up for the house party. And they make this, Shep says this thing, is like, of course we're having a house party. There's no furniture. There's not a better time to have a house party. I was like, I never even thought of that, but that would be the best time. No one's going to break any of
it. Empty house, yeah, 1,000%.
Griffith and Fuckwit are upstairs fighting, and they've been arguing all night long.
I really love that the show didn't give us so much exposition that this was – two in our face. It kind of left us guessing and questioning like what happened. So what I pieced together was that they were interns together.
Well, they studied together and they were interned together, yeah.
And she was getting bullied and got kicked out of the program, and he didn't stick up for her. It also sounds like he didn't chase her. He didn't come find her for a very long time, like until now.
Did we... Am I confusing her storyline with someone else's where she was had a whole lot of racial bias against her and sexism? Was that her storyline? I remember this being a thing from one of our characters. It might have even been Maggie, that during their internship there was a lot of racial and sexist bigotry towards them. But either way, the point of the matter is that we find out that she was treated awfully and marginalized and tortured at this hospital. And out of everything that he's saying to her, he misses her. He doesn't feel good without her, this, that, the other. He doesn't actually point out anything about why he misses her. It just seems very one-sided. Just like, oh, there's no one there to do my laundry anymore.
Totally.
Oh, I miss the way that you used to cook dinner. You know, very...
You think it's a very Weber situation?
Yeah, very servicey.
I also feel like we didn't get anything from her being like, this is why I loved him. I felt better with him. I felt this, like he made me feel protected or safe, because he clearly didn't.
That's what I mean.
So it's like... Why? I don't even think she understands why. I think it's just a person at a time in her life when they were together and it felt right, I guess, or they just have so much history that's it. I don't know.
It's just that comfort thing. So they've been together for long enough that they were engaged, ready to be married.
He knows her family. She says she was like, my parents love him. Yeah.
Oh, that was a big thing. My parents love him. My grandparents love him. And Lucas comes through with a, because this moment's amazing. Fuckwit boyfriend, they're downstairs and he's basically talking shit about all of her friends and her colleagues, which you've spent all night locked inside her bedroom. How the hell have you managed to make these opinions?
Also, the only person it seems like he's hung out with is Yasuda, and she's the best person in the world. She let him in. She stalked him on Instagram to make sure that he knew Simone. And then it looks like they were just kind of both hanging out yesterday.
Like, I would understand him having this opinion of these doctors if he maybe did the thing that people have done in the past where he came into the ER or into the clinic just at that perfect moment where everything was in shambles and it was their fault. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's come in, being greeted and kindly, hospitably taken care of by Yasuda, and then spent all night fighting with Griffith. So you're telling me in the 20 minutes that you've been sitting in this backyard doing nothing but talking to Griffith, you've decided that these people are slovenly and not worth her time and lower rung? Go fuck yourself.
Ew.
Gross.
I also think he also mentioned like a bit of a stigma towards the hospital, towards Grace Sloan. And like, you know, I do kind of understand. Well, I don't understand, but I understand him getting that opinion if that's an opinion of the hospital in their world. But you can't also personally judge the people that work there.
And the only reason that she's there is because the hospital that you hold so high and mighty forced her hand. But she rightly storms off from this conversation, like, fuck you, bro, and goes into her room and Lucas comes in to stare at her and tell her that she always looks amazing. To me, you are perfect. And then good things happen.
I really like that he says, like, and when you're angry, you're more perfect. You get angry and you get smarter. Because I think what he's missing is that inside of anger, there's passion. And I think that that's kind of what he is referring to. Because sometimes you see someone angry and they're terrifying and it's ugly and it's like scary. But it's like her anger comes from such a place of
yearning,
passion, and
just it's I hate it when the drag queens say it, but it lights a fire under her ass. Her anger motivates her to do better, to find solutions, and he just drinks her in this moment.
Yeah. It's interesting because I remember in the first episode or one of the first episodes when Amelia and Meredith are talking about Lucas, I'm pretty sure they say something like this is such a horrible word to call someone, but they were like, he's a bit late, like lazy or a bit, you know, he doesn't put in
the idea that he's riding on the coattails of his family name.
Yeah. So potentially him getting so inspired and so in awe of this fire in Simone and her drive and her passion to solve cases is going to be a huge turning point for him.
So I wouldn't say they're making out. They're really just absorbing each other, and it's perfect, this scene.
Oh, Ailey, you make it sound so.
It was. It wasn't a drunk rumble.
No.
Mm-mm. But Fuckwit knocks on the door and kind of demands her attention. He hasn't listened to any of the boundaries or anything, and it's a very classic and warning sign for me of he's just love bombing the shit out of her. Oh, I didn't mean it. I'm not judgy. You can do whatever you want. Like, I love you. I love you. I love you. We're meant to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's half naked, they're half naked. And she asks him for a minute, but Lucas says do you love him? Because Griffith's just like, well, he loves me. I don't know what to do. He's like, do you love him? She says, my family loves him. But do you love him? You should talk to him if you love him. And Griffith kind of says, are you pushing me away? It's like, no, I just can't compete with love. And I think that that was really adult.
I think so too.
Him, the fuckwit, I can't remember his name.
Trey.
Then does the scariest thing. They come down to the table and there's this really great moment, which I thought this whole episode that Trey looked a lot like Fez from that 70s show. And then they have a moment around the drinks table that's very reminiscent of that 70s show when they just kind of pan the camera around. They're all kind of making jokes and lightening the situation. So they end up going outside and Trey gets down on one knee and does the grand gesture. And again, that feels like scary, ominous love bombing to me. Very Burke and Christina.
This is scary to me because this is so obviously not planned. He clearly wasn't going to do this. He wasn't thinking of doing this.
He was expecting.
I felt like he was doing it. Because he was expecting to go there. She wasn't giving
and
him
have her
everything.
Be like, oh my God, you're back. I'm so happy. You've come to save
me. Much. Yeah.
But he comes back and sees her thriving.
Yeah.
Wants to poop on
and then
it.
He cuts her down for it, says everything's shit. Her friends are not her friends. She's so much better than them. Like, what are you doing here? Wasting your time. And then I think he gets scared upstairs when she asks for a minute and doesn't just automatically let him in. That he's like,
yeah, I think their dynamics changed from what
doing
it was.
This as a possessive, scary motive. And I can't believe she says yes.
Doesn't say yes.
That was shocking to me.
She awkwardly does the smile and nod because you're doing it in front of a huge amount of people. And
yeah, fuck public proposals.
No,
honestly, how terrifying.
This. If people say no to marriage, do they break up?
I think it would change from couple to couple because I think someone saying no to their sometimes I think someone would be so sad that they got a no and so feeling so ashamed and rejected and embarrassed that they would break it off. But I think in other couples where they're probably better at communicating, the person, if it was because they just aren't ready, I think you could work your way through that. You could be like, hey, I don't actually want to get married. I think we're really good where we are. I want to stay together, but this isn't something I want to do or I'm not ready. I think like if you can communicate that, then I don't think you have to break up at all. I think with our generation, it's not automatically assumed that we want to get married. I think that's the difference. It's we're able to communicate that not everyone wants this now.
But these are kind of first and second date discussions. Is marriage something you believe in and you want to do, and a baby something you believe in and want to do?
I mean, it's first and second date discussions now. It wouldn't be in your 20s. It wouldn't be when they're like,
I don't know. I've been making pretty firm lines about what happens if the condom breaks for a very long time.
That's interesting.
We have some other juicy gossip from the party, which again, we just wanted a little bit more information. And that's our older residents. Helm's back, not working at the bar tonight. And Levi is falling asleep at the door.
Levi/Levi. You're where fun goes to die. When Helm said that, that made me so happy. It was like, oh, it's so good knowing that he still has her. They're still housemates and she can give him shit about it. You know, I just think it's important when someone's being a little bit grumpy or whatever, if it's not really super warranted, it's good to have that friend. I think it's important to have that friend.
Like, come on. I, in my early 20s, I knew a girl and she used to call these people fun sponges.
Oh my God,
I love
that.
They suck the fun out of everything.
Levi is such a fun sponge.
he's an absolute fun sponge, but he makes a comment that I would have made, and that is, I am their boss, there needs to be a level of separation. And it just reminded me of the house party in season one where Bailey rocks up and her pashmina wrap asking for the bourbon. Because in this episode, she walks in asking for the bourbon.
Oh, Bailey. Oh, my God, she does. She's still the same. Yeah. She's still our Bailey. She's still there.
Just
a bourbon gal.
Urban gal. But Helm's like, Levi, you need to get laid. Get off this wall and go mingle.
And he doesn't really, but mingle goes to him.
Marco.
I thought it was Carlos.
Carlos. Damn it.
Carlos is just a new character out of the absolute fucking blue.
And they throw it out there because they're like, oh, he's just a temp. I travel around to different hospitals. I spend like 3 months here and there. He's the dude who covers people on maternity leave.
Yeah, totally. But also like the fact that he's a bit older and the fact that he even says like, I brought my own drinks because I work too hard to drink whatever interns have at a house party.
That also feels like something I would do. I feel like they're
but
sitting
like,
around
then
my
why
age
are you
bubble.
There?
Because he's new
to
the hospital.
So.
And someone invited me to, is he new to the hospital? Because when he asks Levi out on a date, he's like, I know this little place.
Well, he must come often. If he travels around, it's not like he's never been to Seattle, but he's not like a regular person that's worked there for years, but he's probably on and off there every now and again. So he probably does know little places in lots of cities. You know when people travel for work a lot? Like those people in your life, but they're always like, oh, yeah, I know a place in Spain. Oh, you're going to Bali? Yeah, I know. Down this little alley, there's this thing. Oh, yep, Sydney, I know some great restaurants. They know like something about everywhere.
I couldn't tell you where anything is in Sydney, but when you put me in Sydney, I kind of know my
Sydney
way around.
It's confusing.
It's just what's wrong with the grid, people. But that's beside the point. The point is that Levi's bad at people. And Carlos is really doing a
lot
of the work.
Carlos just went, him. He looks good. He looks yummy.
That one looks tasty. Yeah. I want a bite.
And just is doing all of the work.
And he says, but there's this very genuine moment of writing, especially for now, where Carlos says, I'm a Sagittarius. And Levi's like, I'm a Jewish? And Carlos is like, what does he say? Cute, handsome, smart, funny doctor. It's everything my mum could have wanted for me. And they both bond over the fact that they've got, like, you know, a very Jewish mother and a very Spanish mother being in control of their love
lives. It's really good. I love this for Levi. I just don't understand why Carlos is so all in straight away and Levi's not really doing much work, you know? Like, I just feel like
he looks so scrumdiddlyumptious.
It's nice for Levi to have this. Levi needs an outlet. He needs a fun.
Yeah. And look, Levi's always kind of dated people who are more extroverted and confident than him.
True.
He's still a nervous little bunny and he feels out of place here. He feels like this potentially shouldn't be somewhere that he should be because, you know, he's supposed to be their superior. It doesn't stop him full on eating Carlos's face in front of the big window on the porch.
Yeah.
They are having a time.
And you recognize this house today, right? I feel like this looked exactly like Meredith's house.
Yeah, this is the house, 100%. Yeah. What I don't recognize was the ICU, though. That was a room that I've never been in before.
Oh, we have to talk about the hospital of it all, don't we?
Yeah, but speaking of rooms we've never been in before.
Owen and Teddy's house?
Well, that, but also Asuda just casually mentioning that she slept with a girl in medical school and then says, hey, Helm, want to go see my hole? Amazing. And is it just me or did they come down looking a little tussled?
They did.
When they came down and the party was dead and they put on music, like it could have been very windy up in the attic.
That's so, that makes more sense because I didn't understand where they'd cut, like I didn't understand that they actually made it to the hole. I thought
we don't have confirmation of them making it to
the
hole.
No, but you met that, what you're saying is they went upstairs and then we saw them coming back down and that's when the party was dead. I thought,
correct.
I was like, they've gone up to the attic and when they went up to the attic, that's where the dead party was. And I was like, it's weird her attic looks like this. I understand what you mean. That makes more sense because when they come into the dead party zone, Asuda's really puffed. She's like, I was like, what?
It's like going downstairs is going easier than upstairs.
I'm so confused. But, right. Okay. So potentially,
some sus.
They had a time
mm-hmm.
up and in then the hole.
I feel like they were all shown videos of how our characters used to dance in the early thousands and tried their darndest to dance it out.
I love that they danced it out. Mm-hmm. They went into slow motion. The camera started moving. It's exactly the way.
Hair flipping around.
It's exactly the way that Christina and Meredith have always danced it out. The camera mm-hmm. movements were right. The way they were dancing was right. They were throwing their arms around. They weren't trying to look good. They were just fucking dancing it out. And it's exactly what I needed.
Do you know who else really needed to dance it out today, though? Teddy and Owen just.
I think I forgot how much bickering they have been doing. We haven't seen it to this extent for a little while. And they are really still biting each other.
Yeah, and I think we can probably jump over most of what was said. Obviously, I spoke about it a while, not perceiving malice
yeah.
in actions of a partner when you're upset with them. That is not something these two do. They always automatically perceive malice.
Totally. Everything that the other one says, they instantly go, oh, that was an attack on me. That was a personal attack mm-hmm. on me.
Like when Teddy gets home, Owen lets her know that there was another bite. Why didn't you tell me sooner? Well, I'm telling you now because you've just gotten home. It's the first minute I've seen you.
Totally. And he knows this is Teddy's first. They mentioned that this is like her first day.
Day.
As chief.
Yeah.
So
this is the actually, day after.
Owen probably did the right thing. Like just she doesn't need to hear about this right now. She just needs to learn how to do this job, this mm-hmm. massive job that comes with so much responsibility. And already there's like a whole press situation. Like there's so much more going on than her just learning the job today.
Correct. And Owen, you know, just is immediately sort of nitpicking at her and, you know, they're just throwing everything back in each other's faces. Like Bailey asks about how the resumes are going for Chief of Trauma.
Yeah.
And Owen gets really salty, but the valid point is that he doesn't have a medical license and it's harder to recruit for an interim chief than a chief.
Of course.
And I'm sorry, but it's – and Teddy says this is a business decision. I think telling him to grow up and deal with it, inappropriate, but it's business. But he also immediately – like when they first – Bailey and Ben first walk in the door – Owen says something along the lines of, oh, you know, Teddy's just really struggling with her first day of the job that we both did for 5 years.
He says,
what?
I'm sorry, she's a bit tired for doing one day of the job that the two of us had done for years. I caught that too. And I was like, that's a horrible thing to say. A, it's her first day. First
day. This should be a celebratory
dinner. This should be such a celebration. And, yeah, she's tired because do you know when you start a new job, you have to learn a lot of shit. Your brain, like, mm-hmm. explodes with how much new information is being fed to you in such a short amount of time. It takes a while to get your feet on the ground at any new job. It's more exhausting at the start. It takes a while. He should be helping her. He should be like, cool, what did you see? Like, I can help you with anything. Was anything a bit confusing?
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, we were saying at the start of this, who else should be at that dinner party? The other people that should be at this dinner party are the people who've been chief or in the chief position before. Mm. And there should be a, hey, Teddy, congratulations on your first day. We're going to sit down. We're going to have a debrief. If you have any questions for us, let us know. We're here to help you because we all understand how difficult this job has been in the past.
Totally. And like to make such a comment like, oh, it's unreasonable for her to be tired because, you know, we did it for so long. It's like, yeah, you both did it for so long, but you were both exhausted the whole time. You made mistakes.
You nearly burnt down the fucking hospital.
Yeah. He crashed the plane. It killed people. Like,
but he also nearly burnt down the hospital.
Yeah. And Bailey completely burnt out. It's a hard job. So shut your face hole, Owen.
Mm-hmm. But Bailey absolutely nails it on the head and says, because the whole biting of the children thing came back that we were very confused about.
I know. I thought that was never going to, I thought we'd never hear that again. And it's like they just used that.
They put the whole thing in for Bailey to be able to scold Teddy and Owen and say, of course your child is biting. All they experience at home is you two biting each other with nasty looks. This is all with nasty words, nasty looks, biting comments, being really aggressive. This is affecting your children. Go get help.
Yeah, I thought it was good, actually. I was all about that coming back. I'm glad that it made sense. It was weird that they were so awkward about bringing it up, though. And, you know, they were like, do we talk about it? Do we not talk about it? And they were kind of angry at Teddy and Owen for their kid. It's like, you should just have that chat. Yeah.
Bailey wasn't?
Oh, yeah. Ben was. Bailey wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. But Ben also made a really offhanded comment about having to take a sideline in his role.
Yeah.
Because
of Prue.
Yeah.
It was nice having moment. Ben back on Grey's, though, just got to say. Bloody love having him around.
I do really enjoy Ben, but I think there was a really funny moment at the end of this where, you know, just after Bailey has said, you guys need help, Owen says, I think we should have people around more often, and Teddy's just like, bite me.
Yeah, that was good.
But then after dinner, Bailey and Ben are walking a very long way to their car. And Bailey pulls Ben aside and says, what is the resentment? Mm. Ian, tell me what's going on or do I have to drag it out of you? And Ben's pretty honest with her in this moment and says, I resent you going back to work. I hate myself for saying it, but I'm worried that I'm not raising this little girl right and I miss you.
I think he has every right to express that he is feeling like that, but I don't think he has any right to make her not work. I think they need to have this conversation. If he has all these feelings and it's being pent up and he is so fearful of how he's going with Prue, because there is so much pressure on him having Prue. Like, that's such a huge storyline in Station 19, and that whole station is cool. Like,
because I wasn't sure what was going on here. Can you fill us in a little?
Well, this is kind of an old storyline, but the fight for them, do you remember how they fought to get Prue? They went through so many court cases. It was so hard. This whole station knew that Ben was like unofficially the guardian after Prue's dad died. And they all kind of fought so hard for Prue to stay with Ben and Bailey and to stay like in the firehouse family. Because if the grandparents took Prue, like, she'd be living so far away and she wouldn't be able to see them. And it's like,
so are they both working part-time so they can spend more time at home with Prue? Is that what's happening?
Well, Ben doesn't work the like big dangerous fires anymore. He does just a lot of the admin sort of stuff, and like, he doesn't put himself in harm's way, and he drives like it's like, it's not an ambulance, but it's kind of like the fire brigade's ambulance. The
surgery van, yeah.
Okay. It's called the medic van. So he loved running into fires. Like, he loves doing the dangerous hero shit, and he doesn't do it anymore. So he has taken like a big thing away from the job that, you know, like, he has given up quite a lot. But
he maybe just doesn't feel like Bailey's given up the same, but, you know, she says she's prioritizing her family. She's cut her hours down.
Yeah.
She's not doing weekend calls and stuff like that anymore.
I think he just needed to have this chat. I don't think he's angry at her. I don't think it's, well, this is what I'm hoping anyway. You know, when you just you have a feeling and it's something to do with your partner and it just feels yucky to keep it in and you're just like, this is just building and building and making me feel worse and worse. And just having that chat and being like, hey, I actually, this is what I'm feeling and maybe it's a little bit irrational, but I just need to talk it out with you that I do feel
they're
this.
Often really hard things to say because they are a little irrational and you understand they're irrational, but it doesn't stop it going round and round and round in your brain.
That's how I read this scene. And I read it as if like, oh, this is just actually them communicating.
And see, I didn't have the backstory of what was going on.
Yeah.
So thank you for the backstory. Much appreciated.
How did you read it? You thought he was being...
You think no, it all just seemed to come a bit left of center and I didn't really understand why he was upset. I didn't realize that he'd taken a backseat or what exactly was going on with Prue and how she was being reared, I suppose.
Well, it's interesting because it hasn't been a storyline for a little while in Station 19. It's been, but it has, it's kind of like a ongoing thing, but it hasn't been at the forefront of any stories for a little while. But I also haven't seen this week's episode.
So it might be.
So it might be. Might be back. Yeah.
People we haven't spoken about today. Quan and Millen.
Yeah.
Been left in charge of the ICU.
They're doing a little overnighter.
Told try not to kill anyone.
Well, I think that's a callback.
It is.
Yeah. So that's so nice. I enjoyed that. We get a little banter from these two and they get a little bit competitive because they both really want in on this surgery that's happening in the morning with Maggie. So we do have a couple of patients today and Maggie's patient is kind of the main one, really.
I feel like we really went over the whole Joe and Link patient. I think it's done. That's for done. Natalia is our main patient today. And Natalia is great and her husband is great. And this, similar to the abortion episode last week, is just a really honest, brutal expose of what it's like being someone with a long-term illness in America.
It's just so important. Episodes like this, storylines like this just make me so proud to be someone who watches Grey's Anatomy. And I just want to scream at people sometimes, like, how are we not all watching this? How are we not all learning from this show? Come on, everyone. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Why are you sleeping on this?
Pay more attention. And it just really does go back to the fact and the reason that we started this podcast is that Grey's Anatomy really does talk about what is happening in a socioeconomic time frame.
Totally. Of
when the show is being made.
Totally.
And it's just so very relevant. But yeah, Natalia's come in because she's got stage 3 esophageal cancer. But she ends up having a seizure while she's in the ICU overnight and they find a metastasis in the brain, which is where a part of your cancer travels up and takes root there.
Also, she's a teacher. I don't really remember sure what her partner does, but they make it very clear that her having this huge surgery in the morning is a big financial burden. And they are talking about how she is selling paintings online and every time she makes a sale, they get really excited, which is really cute. And he's very encouraging of this. And do you think it's just like a cute side hobby until you kind of realize that no, this, if she doesn't sell enough paintings, if they can't source enough money, this is going to be complete financial ruin. This is the kind of last thing that they can hope to pay for. So there's a lot riding on it because if she doesn't make it through this surgery and they have spent their life savings, he's going to be left with like a lot of debt all by himself and not having a partner.
Which is something that I didn't realize happened. I'm pretty sure that debts don't get transferred like that in Australia.
Really? I think it totally does.
Mm-mm. I looked into it because I know that in America, parental debt can be transferred onto the children. And that's absolutely not a thing here.
So spousal debt. But this is what it's doing. Because they're married, it's both of their debt.
But here it's not.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So things like a mortgage, if both your names are on it, absolutely.
Yeah.
But no, it's kind of like, so we have HEX debts where the government pays for your schooling and then you pay it back.
Mm.
For Americans or anyone else listening out there, it's sort of like a tax. It just comes out of your paycheck once you earn over a certain amount. But if you were to pass away or never earn over that certain amount, you never have to pay your HEX back. It's just done.
Yeah. And what about
it doesn't transfer
medical?
If you die,
no one pays it. Just disappears. The government pays it.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. I didn't know that.
They can go after your estate if you have an estate, but most people don't.
Wow. I didn't know that at all.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it can be taken out of your estate if you have undue stuff. And if you don't have a will in place, all of your assets automatically go to the government.
Yeah.
And it can be paid off that way. But, yeah, any outstanding debts will be paid off by your estate. But if you don't have an estate, then.
Yeah, wow, I didn't know. Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So in this situation, it will all be transferred to the husband.
Yeah, which is terrifying.
Totally.
But it leads Kwan to say to them, you should get a medical
divorce.
Because if you get a divorce and anything happens, because she's going in for brain surgery and there's a likelihood that she may not survive.
Totally. I mean, these surgeries are the most risky. Brain surgeries are terrifying. At best. What's interesting is that Kwan's suggestion makes so much sense and he explains it really well. And then he gets so reprimanded by Maggie. And I understand that, like, yeah, he probably shouldn't have spoken out of turn, but like,
wasn't in the room.
Was it out of turn? Maggie's upset because he should have talked to her first before he goes and like stresses the patient out. But the patient isn't actually stressed. He's just solved a huge problem that they're having.
Well, it all comes down to patient care, really.
Yeah.
And part of being a doctor is giving people all of their options. And Kwan makes this great comment to Maggie because they end up choosing to get this divorce. And oh my God, so beautiful.
So beautiful.
They bring down a hospital lawyer. And she says, this feels like we're getting married all over again.
Yeah. And kind of is, because I feel like when people get married, they're saying, I love you so much to do this. And when they were doing this divorce, it's the same thing. They're like, I love you so much. We have to do this. Like, it's still showing love.
Mm. I really don't understand the husband's objection to getting a divorce because it's not a real divorce. It doesn't mean anything. It's not an emotional divorce.
Yeah.
And Kwan says, if you trusted her enough to marry her, trust her enough to unmarry her.
I just genuinely think they put that in there because there would be a lot of people not understanding. And it just gives the show the space to have that conversation of like explaining the emotional side of it. As well. I just think there would be people who think what that husband thought, even though it was very clear that that's not what was happening at all. It wasn't her being like, I don't love you anymore. On my deathbed, let's get divorced. Like, it was so obviously not that from the start. And having that was annoying to me until
Same.
He had that conversation. And then the fact that he changed his mind very quickly, I was very thankful.
The vows, though. I promise to love you until my dying breath. I promise that I will always grow in divorce to love you like I did in marriage.
Yeah.
Mm.
So good.
I stopped taking notes. I was like, I need to be in this. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. I really liked this storyline.
Yeah, all Corn's done is taken him in a little snacky snack and some water, and as he's exiting the room, Maggie just starts fucking biting at his heels like an angry little chihuahua.
It was weird.
And Quan lashes out and says what we've all been thinking, what I've always thought throughout this whole thing, and that's, do we just act like medicine costs nothing in this country and this doesn't have an impact on our patients' healthcare? And we find out that because we knew his mum had been unwell and died in hospital.
Yeah, and we knew that they made a comment that he got the phone call saying that his mum passed away last episode.
Mm. But what we find out now is that, like I was saying before, parental debt is now on him. He now has to pay those medical bills. And Maggie changes her tune immediately, but I think that this is something that always needs to be considered.
Mm.
In these cases, like Natalia initially, when they said we need to do this test before the morning, she's like, do I have to do that? Because like I have to get an internal ultrasound, and the place that my doctor has asked me to get it done is private, and for some reason they won't take my private health insurance. I have to pay for everything up front.
Really?
They will give me a Medicare rebate,
yeah,
but I need to pay the $560 and then have it rebated.
That's ridiculous for an ultrasound.
Mm-hmm. But do you know how much that ultrasound would cost in the US? Closer to $5,000. It's wild.
It's so wild. It's so wild thinking that we're so used to whenever we need ultrasounds not paying for them.
X-rays, man. X-rays cost about $1,000 a pop in certain states.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I had a friend with a broken rib. And they can cost about that as well. So if you're international in Australia and you just want to step foot in a hospital, you got to pay $500 up front.
Man, it's so hard. Yeah, it's so hard.
But Maggie is quite shocked by this and wants to be apologetic. It's like maybe the whole hospital needs to learn not to perceive malice at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because Maggie Webber comes in and is like, how was the morning, everyone? How did we go? And Maggie asks Webber about him and Catherine and how he knew it was a rough patch and not malignant when it came to their big breakup.
Yeah.
And Webber basically says behind all of their fighting, they knew that there was a lot of love there.
Mm.
And he can see the love between Ndugu and Maggie.
Can he though? What glasses has he got? I want that prescription.
I would love those rose-colored glasses. I genuinely like a pair of rose-colored glasses. Makes everything so calm and fuzzy.
I don't know what he's seeing. He's seeing a side of Maggie and Ndugu. You always say Maggie and Winston, which is fine. Maggie and Winston that we don't see. It's funny because we both have a tendency to say people's names the opposite.
Like you say first names, I say last names.
Or when I say certain people, when I say their first names, you constantly say their last names. Or certain people that you only say their first names, I will only say their last names. Like it's always the opposite and it's really funny to me. Anyway.
I couldn't tell you Maggie's last name.
Pierce.
Thanks. I'm really bad at names. I was a terrible choice to do podcasts with. Evan would have been all over it like a hot rash.
No, it's not about that. I got the names. It's all good. I'm actually bad with names too, but I'm good on this show.
Oh, Millen's first name is Jules.
Yeah. Remember the whole like they were trying to get that this first episode where we were kind of learning the interns, they were trying to give us ways to remember all of their names.
Mm.
And they were like talking about nickname, you know, the whole show. It's so funny.
Oh,
the princess thing. It's like, you look like a princess, like a jewel.
Did you notice?
Jules. I was like, that's silly.
The callback this episode. So they all rock up the next morning and Levi tells them that a party last night is being hungover is no excuse to be late to rounds. And Lucas makes a really funny comment to Asuda and she goes, oh, go fall on a lightsaber.
Fucking what? I know. I was like, what? What? Yeah, bizarre.
But yeah, I'd
it's hard. I don't like that they tried to give them all nicknames at the start. And now that we know their names, the nicknames are tripping me up. So it's like, I forget that Lucas / little Derek / like, Lucas, Shep, Skywalker, like it's too many names.
Just there's far too many nicknames.
And now it's
him.
Like, yeah. Who's the other one? Oh, Quan and being called Blue. And then that joke that Yasuda made the other day being like, oh, he's not blue anymore. He's red. It's like, what is happening?
I don't know. But we didn't really have too many wrap-ups this episode.
We didn't.
I will say that Griffith came in to the locker room showing off her ring, which I thought was a bit weird because the girl's like, oh, my God, where they should be like, what?
Oh.
What? Because that isn't most women's automatic reaction to a friend suddenly getting engaged to someone they haven't seen in months.
But if you didn't know, these guys don't know each other that well yet. And I think not being happy for them, this is actually, weirdly, a similar conversation that we're having in season 3 after George and Callie get married really quick. Because remember how no one was super excited for George instantly? They were just like, ah. And then we talked about how that even if you should just be.
Yeah, but George and Callie had been in a relationship. As far as most of these people know, she's single.
No, but she was wearing her engagement ring around her neck on a necklace. And they knew that the ex had come back.
Oh.
So yes, as far as they know, but I don't think
I feel like Jules didn't.
They made a comment about it. Like she had it on a necklace, her engagement ring.
Oh, okay. So I must have just missed that.
It was very brief. There's been a lot going on. But I just think if you don't know that well, you'd just be like, yay.
Yeah. But my favorite part about this wrap up is Levi walking away with a smile on his face and a spring in his step. Very cute.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only wrap-up that I can really remember. Oh, aside from Quan angrily grabbing his jacket and storming out. And Amelia and Joe sharing a moment about he wasn't right for me, but he's right for you. Talking about Link.
Totally. So there is a bit of a Joe and Link might be happening again, pushed for them to get together. And we do find out as well that Kai is about to come and spend the night or spend a couple of days, spend some time with Amelia, which is very exciting.
More excitingly. but thank you all so much for listening. We would love to hear your thoughts. I know that someone
Pause. I have one thought. We did get a message from a lovely listener talking about this episode, and I just wanted to read it out. So Karina has messaged us, and this is her message. I just finished the newest episode, and I really need to talk about it. I really liked it, to be honest. It felt like an original Grey's episode. The dinner party at Teddy and Owen's was really funny, and how nice is their home? But why didn't Simone say no to Trey? I want her with Lucas. Also, Tamsin, does Lucas remind you of Gibson, the way he talks and looks? Maybe it's just me. I'm going to answer that. I've never really thought about that until just now, but I understand what you're saying, and it's probably going to be in my brain a little bit more.
Who's Gibson?
Gibson is from Station 19.
Oh.
So back to this message. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Do you guys ship Maggie and Winston? Ayla?
Do I watch them?
Ship them. Like, are you for their relationship? We are not. We do not ship these two together. We don't like Maggie and Winston.
Is this...
Did Ayla just learn a new word?
I need to learn the new word. What does shipping mean?
I don't understand where it came from, but it means like you're like rooting for that couple. Like you ship them together.
Also, like, do you stan them? Has stan changed to ship?
I guess so. Are we really old?
Okay. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. I just realized that I'm sitting here in a robe with a giant cup of coffee, and I might be my parents. I'm done. I don't know the new lingo anymore.
Weber said there's a lot of love between them, but to be honest, I don't really see it. Neither do we. Mm-mm. And I know you guys don't want Joe and Link together, but I kind of do. I'm sorry.
I just think we're really excited about a
non-traditional family.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all.
That's it.
I'll let you say goodbye now.
You can do it.
Thank you so much for listening. Speaking to myself, I loved this episode. This was a hoot. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, these two episodes have been
like it's back.
Very good.
Great. I'm very excited for next week. And, you know, I'm going to go watch Station 19 now.
I'm going to go make another cup of coffee. Have a wonderful week. Please feel free to shoot us a little message and say a little hello at Scalpels and Tequila on Instagram. Otherwise, you can reach out to us individually if you like. Tamsin is Miss T Hayes, and I am really a long-winded Instagram title. You'll find it on the Scalpels and Tequila one. Thank you all so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Vagina. Sing it. Vagina.
I think I've accidentally got a Zoom filter on, but like, oh, she looks cute today.